Recently on the show, we've been taking a look at heat and how we all try to adapt to it in a series called Hot Town. Air conditioning is an expensive proposition and is certainly uncomfortably pricey for many Arizonans, but try to imagine living in the desert when AC wasn't anywhere. Not only did residents not have it in their houses, it obviously wasn't available for a quick cool down at a restaurant or hotel or other local business. Chris Reed, a writer and researcher with the Pinal County Historical Society, makes regular presentations as part of the AZ Speaks program hosted by Arizona Humanities. Her next one, called They Beat the Heat, How Arizonans Survived the Desert Heat, is coming up on Sunday at the Glendale Public Library's Foothills Library. Reed's presentation focuses on three different kinds of approaches residents use to deal with the heat: external, internal, and mental. When I spoke with her earlier, I started by asking her to begin with some examples of the mental approach.
I did find one. I tried to find more, but I could only find one really, a cartoon from the 20s. And it basically showed a fella in his t-shirt and shorts sitting on his bed with a fan and a glass of iced tea. And the caption basically said something to the effect that, you are better off in Phoenix at 108 than Chicago at 90 because of the humidity. And I think that's where it's not the heat, it's the humidity maybe started. When I do my program, I kind of bring it up to date with some of the modern stuff that we do with mental attitude, laughter, and being able to joke about it's hotter than hell and so forth. And then also I was here when I think it was 122 many, many years ago. And now there's t-shirts that say I survived 122 in Phoenix. So I think it's that it's not only humor, but a sense of kind of perverted pride. You know, it may sound terrible, but look, I survived it. And so we brag a little bit about how awful it was. But having survived it, then, you know, we're tough customers, I guess. Even the newspapers, I was always shocked at the ads for summer clothing. I mean, they were pretty blunt. It said, why swelter? You know, where are these light clothing items that you know, help you to bear the heat a little better?
Let's talk about some of the other approaches going back in the day. Can we talk about some examples of external approaches?
Well, first of all, how you built your house. I actually live in Florence, and we have a lot of adobes, and unfortunately, adobes have been pretty much lost, in Phoenix, unfortunately. You still have Daryl Dupa's adobe, but adobes make so much sense because it's just a mud brick that absorbs the heat during the day, keeping it from coming inside. And then back in the old days when deserts actually got cold at night, you know, that was before all the construction and buildings and asphalt and everything else. Then a little bit of that heat would come into the inside of the house to warm you from that cold. And how you place the house on the property, you know, you didn't put a lot of windows facing south, of course. And even design of the house, you know, some of them had what they called a zaguán, a central hallway, and each of the rooms would then have a window accessing the outside and then a doorway so that this hallway would almost create a breeze all the time. And so as long as there was a little bit of a breeze, that helped. And then of course you could add something to your house. You could put awnings. It's amazing what awnings will do. It's something like 65% if you have a south facing window, you know, savings in your amount of power that you need to cool. And then we even had, well, of course, shutters that you could shut, have the window open and still shut the sun out. And then sleeping porches, that's the one I always loved, and there are a few pictures of people with sleeping porches. You would actually sleep outside and you would hang a canvas curtain, wet it down. And evaporation is the one thing that really makes the difference on our bodies as well. That's why we perspire, it's a way of cooling our systems. Well, the same thing with a wet sheet, it would create a little bit of a cool and you could just sleep outside. In fact, there was a lady that came to Florence and wrote a memoir about being here in the 1890s, turn of the century. And she said, everybody slept outside. You could just barely walk down the street because everybody was sitting outside, sleeping outside. And then also summer kitchens. It makes sense if you're, you know, the source of a lot of heat inside is cooking, especially in the old days of the, you know, the coal stove or the, you know, wood-fired stove. And so they would have actually a separate building that was called a summer kitchen. And that way all the heat stayed out there. And it made sense as far as fire prevention, because a lot of houses, if there was a fire, it would burn the whole house. But if you had a summer kitchen, chances are the source of that fire was out there. And if it burned, you didn't lose the entire house.
Can we learn from the past? I mean, are there some, you know, we're talking about some of the practices. Are there some we should consider bringing back?
Well, there's one thing I always point out, especially to my groups, often seniors that I'm doing my program for, I'll look around and see how many people came in with a hat. And when I was doing research for this program, I started to find wherever I could find a group picture, you know, of a large group of people outside. What was remarkable is every group shot, everybody, I mean, 99% of people had a hat on. And I think that's one thing that we're not doing. I don't do it myself. I apologize. I know better. But you really need to wear a hat. And it just seems so obvious that they knew that. I think I sent three pictures, and one was the school kids in front of this old schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. Every kid there, I mean, there's like 100 kids. Every one of them had a hat. You knew better than to go outside and not protect your head. And I think that's something that, you know, we always say that, but I don't know that we really do it.
Did people who came out here in the early 20th century have any idea what they were getting into when it relates to the heat and having to come up with some of these tricks?
I suppose not. I mean, but then you learn from the native people, for one thing. I mean, the whole one of the approaches I take with the program is there's two things you really need to survive the heat. You have to have water, and then you have to have a way to cool yourself or get out of the intensity of the sun and the heat. And the irrigation system, you know, once the prehistoric people and their canal system, when Jack Swilling came into Phoenix in the 1860s and saw, why don't we clean these out and start using them again? And so we started to have a whole, especially in Phoenix, a whole water system. And then even like in Florence, there were, we weren't connected to that system, but there was the Gila River. And so they cut canals and irrigation ditches from that. And then every property had a little bit of water coming in where you could actually put in vegetation, which certainly helps with cooling things down. And then you could actually have a garden. You could have, so I think that kind of, I know I've read about Phoenix putting in more trees, like in parking lots and other places. I think that's really vital. It really makes a difference. I know in my own backyard, I have three old mesquite trees. The difference between standing in the sun and standing under them is remarkable.
I understand you actually kind of dress up for the occasion when you do these.
I have a long white cotton skirt and a white blouse, very much like the Gibson girl, big puffy sleeves, and a very big wide brimmed straw hat. And I even carry a parasol just in case. So I do come out, and people get a kick out of that because it does add some color to the presentation. And it takes you back in time. You know, I remember when people dressed like that.
That is Chris Reed, a writer and researcher with the Pinal County Historical Society. She'll be at Glendale Public Library's Foothills Library on Sunday with her presentation, They Beat the Heat, How Arizonans Survived the Desert Heat.